4, 3, 2, 1.
This is an interview with Lynn Wen Navis by Katie Murphy on the 9th of November 2017 at the State Library of South Australia. Also present is Caroline Pascoe. It is a part of the Oral History Project for the Women's Information Service. Firstly, welcome and thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Would you mind telling us when you were born?
I was born in 1956 in Vietnam.
And where did you grow up?
Vietnam.
Okay. Would you mind telling us when you came to Australia?
I came to Australia in December 1978 as one of the boat people.
Thank you. We'd just like to ask you some questions about your time at the Women's Information Service.
Mm-hmm.
When did you first start working at the Women's Information Service?
I started at the Women's Information Service in 1988. In 1987. I was one of the volunteers, and when the job became available, I applied, and I was successful. So I became information officer then.
And when you were working at the Women's Information Service, when you first started, where was it located?
It was at the Institute building, next door to the library here.
On North
Beautiful
Terrace.
Building.
And could you tell us how long you were working at WIS, from when you started as a volunteer till you
got? I was with WIS for 13 years, and I believe back in that time I was the longest serving member, pay member that was. Louisa Sheehan, one of the project officers, Italian project officer, before that I left, she was the longest pay workers, but unfortunately Louisa passed away.
And could you tell me a little bit about why or how you came about to work at the Women's Information Service? How did it all pan out?
Before I came to WIS, I worked for back then, they called it Migrant Women Support Accommodation Service. And I thought that the linking between WIS and that particular service got to do with supporting women. So that's how that I came to work as a volunteer at WIS.
Okay. And why did you specifically want to work at WIS? Was it your experience at the Migrant Women's Centre that...
No. It was just that I thought that WIS is a place of full of information, a central of information, and disperse those information out to the community. And I also see that the needs for my skill to be used fully to assist the women that who speak my language, and so therefore that I would just become a volunteer there.
And you mentioned before that you became an information officer after you'd finished volunteering. Did you hold any other roles while you were at WIS besides the information officer role?
Oh, long time ago now, I cannot remember exactly, but during that time, I think that there was a period that I was working on a project that reviewing the radio program which WIS had at the time. WIS had 4 radio programs, one for the Vietnamese language, one for the Spanish, one for Italian, one for Greek languages. And it was funded by WIS, and those programs would once a week, every half an hour, broadcast on FAIBI. And so I got sort of put aside to do a project to review those programs. And the reason that at the outcome of that project was that if we were to continue with that those program, then the languages that broadcast to the community would be limited to only four communities group. In the meantime, out in the community, there was far much more community group than that. And so the program ceased in 1996. However, the funding of that allocated to that program was to support community groups who have had radio program for their community, for us to give them the information, and they use their language skill to convey it into their language, and we sort of supporting them financially for that particular piece of segment. And that went on, I believe, went on for about a year or so before that would just totally die off.
Could you tell me a little bit about what you liked about working at the Women's Information Service?
What I like working at the Women Information Service is that I feel that the supportedness that amongst the women themselves, and also that the advantage of linking with the Office for Women, back then was the Women Advisor, that given the woman a voice to sort of fit into government, to make policy and make changes.
Mm, very good. And when you were at WIS, could you tell me some of the aims and objectives of WIS at the time? What were they aiming to achieve?
Empowering women, providing information for women to make their own choices. Mm-hmm. I think that those are the key objectives. And also that you give women independent tools to become independent, and therefore that we run a lot of information sessions. When internet had become readily available, internet classes were teaching women how to accessing it, and we run many information sessions on finance and laws and all sorts.
Was there, when you were at WIS, was there a hierarchy in the workplace, sort of levels of management, really?
In any workplace, there will be hierarchy. When I first started, there was only the woman advisor, that who was sort of taken on the role that of fitting through the government. But then after that, that particular position was abolished in creating the Office for Women. And then, of course, and there will be the level of the directors and then the managers and then team leaders and so on. And so in any organisation, there will be a hierarchy. One thing that I like about WIS is that on the ground where you're working, there's no hierarchy. And so, yes, behind the scene, politics and whatever, there always are. But in terms of working on the ground, and we were just all equal.
Well, when you were working in the shop front, can you remember what the atmosphere was like when you volunteered and when you worked there?
When I first started as a volunteer, back then we was at the Institute building, a beautiful old building, very, very high ceiling, and sort of women can just walk in anytime. And everybody were just there, because it's only one room. Everybody were just there. When we did have to move across to the station arcade, I have to say that at first I was not happy, because I thought that given that the atmosphere at the Institute's building is friendly, is easy for people to accept, because it's everything in one room, it could be messy, but that's part of life. But when you go across to the Station Arcade, everything would just become classy. And I for me, I thought that the woman will not feel comfortable to come in, because in particular those women that who do not feel confident when they see something that's a bit classy, they will feel hesitant to come in. But my mind changed when we actually moved into Station Arcade. I felt that, yes, although it does look classy, but the attitude of the workers and the volunteers. When I said, sorry, when I use the word worker, I mean pay and unpaid staff who are on duty at the time, that they're friendly and they're welcoming, and so women can come in easily. And so then I thought they deserve it. They deserve to have a better atmosphere, a nicer place to come into, rather than the place that messy like back then was in the Institute.
When you were volunteering and worked there, do you remember some of the names of the other workers and volunteers you worked with?
There was Norma Booth. There was, together with her, I forgot the other woman's name, but the two of them was very, very close together. There was Heather Beckman, Mel Tonkin, Pat Gill, I think, Joel Wilmot, Louisa Sheehan, Sophie Rose. Her name back then was not Rose, but afterwards she changed to Rose. Stella Hallander, Renee Will, Barbara Wood, the admin person, Pat Ellis. I don't know what a Pat started back then.
Well, Pat is still there.
No, I mean back in the time that when we were at the Institute. Back in the time that when we were at the Institute, that's sort of like earlier time. Then we go across to the arcade. Oh God, I can see her. Very slim, very tall woman from Port Lincoln. I forgot her name. Very softly spoken as well. She worked for the library. Then after that, she got a job in the library. Wendy Thompson, Michelle Carroll, Shannon, my God, what's her last name? I forgot. And of course, sit in front of me, Caroline Pascoe, and a lot of other people that I can't remember their names.
That's a fantastic list. do you remember who the coordinator was at the time when you were there?
The coordinator? Mm-hmm. Back then, when we were woman advisor, then there was a coordinator. The woman advisor, when I first started, was Carol Treloar. And then, and of course, before Carol Treloar, there was Deborah McCulloch. And then, at that time, coordinator was Andy Sebastian. When I started, it was Linda Matthew. And after Linda Matthew left, Linda Matthew become... Is it a coordinator or the manager? I cannot remember well. But then Gubin, Gubin Bosler, she passed away now. She did acting as a coordinator for a little while. And then Vaya Prowse, also coming in. Sophia. Oh, what's her last name?
Aloesh.
Was the manager before I left. There was a period that Wiz has a lot of coordinator and manager in and out.
That's a very comprehensive list. Thank you. That's fantastic. Would you be able to tell me what a typical day at WIS was like? For example, what would just happen day to day?
Day to day. A lot of people on the phone, a lot of calls. Sometimes it's sort of like coming in, one day coming in, we call only DV, and we just one call after another. And then someday there were calls just coming in with financial issues, just one call after another. And that is a pattern. It was sort of like sometime it seemed like the whole day was just that topic. And someday we just all mix. Someday we just really distressful because the nature of the call, I suppose the nature of the service. So we have to learn quickly of how to leave behind when we leave the door.
WIS has also seen many changes over the years. What were some of the changes that were implemented when you were there?
The moving from the Institute to the Station Arcade, the change from the Woman Advisor to the Office for Women, and as I mentioned earlier, the temporary position of so many managers and so many coordinators. there was some period there.
Do you think the service...
In terms of the service itself, we're changing from we're just information over the phone to information over internet and running internet classes and all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's just a big change.
It has been. Do you think the changes have been positive?
Oh, definitely. Definitely the change. We have to change with the flow of the technology and the flow of the world. And I think that is a marvelous change.
Do you think that WIS is still relevant to women today, and in what way?
If you look at the sense of women who are able and capable to access internet, maybe it's not so much of the need. But if you look at the emotional support, I would say yes. We still need to be there to provide that support.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to talk about some of the clients that used WIS now. What memories do you have of women who came in or called in for information? For example, the backgrounds of the clients, as in their demographics, older, younger, cold, Aboriginal, that sort of thing. What type of women used WIS?
There were all sorts. I don't want you to say all sort because it sounds like a thing rather than human. But women who coming into WIS, they were all different ranging ages and also the ranging background. I have to admit that unless you have a worker who specifically for that particular culture, then you attract people of that particular culture coming in. So whenever that Joe Wilmot was around, or the Aboriginal, the Aboriginal workers, her last name Davies, her first name I forgot. Anne, I believe Anne's still there. Is she still there? Mm-hmm. Aboriginal worker. Or Tanya Hodge, you know, very famous woman now. You're holding very high position now. She's also one of the worker there. than Aboriginal people coming in. And so women from all walk of life, not that we ask them their background or their economical background. However, when they're coming in with the issue that they bring about, there were all ranges, either economic or educations or background, cultural background, all sorts.
You mentioned before that some days on the phone you would have all DV or sometimes you'd have all finance. Can you remember some other types of queries you might have gotten when you were there?
Employment?
Mm-hmm.
Legal?
Mm-hmm.
Even recipe. Even recipe. Because back then, internet was not available. So they would just ring up, how long we take to cook this, or how to prepare that, and that kind of thing. So we just use the brain of all the women around the room to answer the question.
Were there times when you weren't able to help some women or someone? And why weren't you able to help them if there were times when you couldn't? Can you remember?
I don't remember specifically, but no doubt there were times that I would not be able to help someone. But if I'm not able to help someone, somebody else would be able to. But then at the same time, I have to say that given my look, Asian, right, sometimes the client coming in, they don't feel comfortable to use me, I mean not to use me, but to access me as a worker that you assist them. For whatever the reason, I don't want to name.
No.
It's only my assumption.
Fair enough. During your time at WIS, so you mentioned you started in 1987,
mm-hmm.
What were the important social issues of the day?
Domestic violence, and to today, still domestic violence. Not change. Back then, maybe it was taboo. Now a little bit more out in open, but it still exists.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, I'd like to talk a bit about the WIS processes, and you did mention before about the internet. When did WIS bring in the internet?
Oh, my God. I can't remember.
So
I remember. I remember that we start the internet way before we moved to, just before we moved to the Station Arcade. When we moved to Station Arcade, it was fully set up. But when we was back in the Institute, we were about to set up, but it was limited number. But I cannot remember when.
So you started...
I cannot remember the year.
No, that's fine. You started at the Institute in 1987 and they didn't have the internet there.
No.
So how did you go about getting the information you needed to help the women when there was no internet?
The knowledge of all the women in the room. So we exchange information from one to another. And also that card, book, KISA, community information, what's it, South Australia? I can't remember what it stands for, KISA. So it's the database that produced by KISA that we use that database to sort of making referrals of services.
A lot
of that relied on knowledge, experience, and skills of women around the room.
So, when the internet did come in, how did it change things, and how did it impact the women working at WIS?
A I suppose that information is readily, but then at the same time, it's not. But then at the time that when the information were first started on the internet, it's not like now. Although the information was readily, but it's not as much as is it now. And also, even that the information was on the internet, is still whether it's a reliable source or not is still a question. And so we still using part of the internet to assist the women, but then at the same time we're still using the woman brain to assist the women.
How do you think the introduction of the internet affected your relationship with the women that came in? Did it change your relationship and the way you gave them information and the way you spoke to them?
No, personally, I don't think so. Mm. I don't think there was any change at all.
And just one last question about the internet. Were you involved at all in the Women's Internet Access Program?
Yes.
Yes, and what was your involvement in that program?
Well, like anybody else, we all checked on to show women how to access internet. And in fact, I was the one that putting the kit together.
Fabulous, thank you. I'd just like to ask you some questions about the Women's Information Service and the community. Were there any kinds of women's and community groups that WIS had a connection with while you were at WIS, for example, rural outreach, the field days or talks to different community groups?
Oh, we did. We took all the opportunity to set up stall, just up information stall at field days and all. And at the time, when we were still in the Institute building, I worked one day outreach out at Salisbury because the people up the north, that they're not coming in. So I based in the woman, in the Migrant Resource Centre in Salisbury. Once a week I would go up there. And in fact, now talking about it, I remember I was out here carrying my daughter, my younger daughter.
Did you go on any of the rural outreach?
We all...
Oh, you did?
Sort of take turn, mm-hmm. go to places. We also that assigned, we were assigned, we have regional area. So I was responsible for the far north, Cooper Pedy, Port Lincoln, Rockby Down.
Okay, and did you go out there often?
Once a year.
Once a year. And when you went out there, what sort of response did you get from the women? How could you help the women? What sort of information were they after?
When I go out to the rural area, I usually would just keyed up with the TAFE in the local area to set up group that tap into the group of student or childcare centre or school and go and talk to group. And the issue of the rural, not much different than the issue of the women in city. However, the distance that can be a barrier for them in terms of facing the domestic violence. Once women that live in the rural area, if they are a victim of domestic violence, it's difficult for them to flee because it's only one bus. And if she's not able to get on that bus for whatever reason, she cannot get out. And in particular, in the rural area is that everybody knowing each other. The policemen also knowing everybody. So the women feel more isolated to get support.
Are you aware of the WIS support group at all?
Oh,
and
yes.
And why it was established?
Yes. They meet every month back then.
Yeah, they did. And did you work with the WIS support group's representative women's organisations at all?
When they come in to the meeting, they, I might see them, say hello, they go off, and that was it.
And that was it.
Yeah. Okay.
Over the years, WIS has collaborated with numerous organisations to provide programs that assist women. Mm. For example, legal advice with the Women's Legal Service or Modern Banking for Older Women. Were you involved in organising or did you participate in any of these or any other programs?
Oh, definitely. We all did. One part or another, we all did.
So what types of programs did you participate in particular?
All of that, or whatever that you mentioned. It was to do with finance, to do with law, to do with employment, to do with internet, to do with whatever. We all involve in part of that because it's not just organizing once and that's it. We're repeating it. And so because we're repeating it, then yes, last time somebody did, and next time somebody else did.
Can you remember a particular program that you were involved in that was particularly successful at all?
Well, I think that if you talk about successful, I would say that the internet, the information sessions. We also sometimes the responding to, I'll now talk about it, the surrogate forum. We did organise a surrogate forum.
Can you tell me a bit more about that?
I remember vaguely that we, is it at the back of the Institute building? That particular forum, there was a panel. I cannot remember who was in the panel now, but Linda Matthew was one of the person there. And we're talking about surrogate mother. We work closely with the relinquish mother group. I cannot remember whether I remember the name of the group correctly or not. The women who run in that group is still, I can see her face. There were so many forums that we organized apart from those information sessions. We also, the forum that to deal with, like time come close to election, give women opportunity to hear about a platform of a particular political party and whatever for them to make decision. I cannot remember the name, but yeah.
Thank you, that's fantastic. Finally, is there anything else that you would like to add or say or make known?
I remember quite clearly one of the women that I helped. This is back the time that when we were at the station arcade. She came in around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, was very distressed. It was related to a work issue. And I, at the time, we closed shop at 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock, she was still very upset, and so I would just say to all the others that would just leave and I would be fine. And so I would just lock the door behind me and would just stay back and talk to the woman. And I have to admit that this woman would just talk. And so 7 o'clock came, the cleaners started to come in, and I said to her, I'm sorry. My husband already sort of waiting to pick me up, and he was just circling outside. And you can see that at Station Arcade, you can see because it's all clear. And so the could see that he's circling outside. But I couldn't leave the woman because she was still distressed. But by the time the cleaner about to come, she was better. So then I said to her that I'm sorry, but the cleaner is about to come in and I have to go. I have to leave now too. And strangely, she said to me that before I go, I want to tell you something. And then she started, I didn't notice she was a psychic. She started telling me about the house that I live in. She described the house I live in, what it looked like and all. And it was scary. It was so scary. And she told me that the woman who lived in the house was waiting for me to become the owner of that house. And I after that session left, I had to say that back. Even now, I remember quite clearly what she said, although it was really, really scary. And that was the very first time in my life I have ever experienced of talking to a psychic.
Thank you, Lynn, for sharing your time, for sharing with us about your time at WIS. It was lovely to hear your story.
Thank you.
Thank you.